Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
It was chaotic in a Massachusetts courtroom yesterday for the arraignments of some of the men involved in last weekend's armed standoff along Interstate 95. Seven men are being held without bail, and dangerousness hearings are scheduled Friday. Two men face arraignment today. Some of the defendants yesterday told the judge the court lacks the authority to prosecute them on weapons charges. Some refused lawyers. Others didn't give their names. They say they're part of a Rhode Island-based group called Rise of the Moors. Mark Pitkavich is a senior research fellow at the Anti-Defamation League's Center on Extremism. He says the Moors consider themselves sovereign citizens who are not U.S. citizens and not beholden to laws.
Perhaps the easiest way to think of the sovereign citizen movement is as right-wing anarchists. They seek a nominal government that is, in effect, no government at all, so that nobody or nothing has any authority over them, and they can do whatever they want, however they want.
So this behavior we heard about in court, when these men were arraigned, some not giving their names, they were sparring with the judge, they said they're foreign nationals and cannot face criminal charges, they didn't want to be represented by attorneys. I mean, is that typical of what's happened in other instances where members of groups like this have appeared in court?
Countless similar incidents. First, sovereign citizens object to being in that courtroom because they believe it's a courtroom belonging to the illegitimate government, and thus it has no jurisdiction or authority over them. They believe that they are not citizens of the United States. They are extremely hostile to attorneys, to lawyers, and will typically want to either represent themselves or to have one of their own gurus represent them in court.
You said there were countless other cases. How does this one compare in the number of members here, 11 people arrested? How does this compare to some of the other cases?
Sovereign citizens typically end up in court. They particularly engage in scams and cons, and then crimes of violence. They can range up to and including acts of terrorism, although sovereign citizens are actually known for spontaneous or unplanned violence. You know, the incident that these people were arrested for is unusual in that they appear to have been traveling to Maine to do some paramilitary training on property there. The sovereign citizen movement is not really known as a movement that engages in paramilitary training. And it appears that they knew what the state laws were for transport of firearms in Massachusetts were, but still did not want to abide by them. It seems like if they had just simply stowed their weapons away properly, they probably would not have gotten in any trouble at all.
Did authorities strike the right balance here in terms of shutting down a highway for several hours and arresting these men and searching the woods for them and arresting these men on all of these gun charges, would you say?
I think during the standoff itself, they acted quite appropriately, given how potentially dangerous standoffs involving sovereign citizens can be. I will say I was surprised after the incident that every single one of them got multiple charges leveled against them, significant charges, more than I actually would have expected from an encounter in which no one actually became violent.
And how much of a threat are these groups, and how have they grown? I mean, why do you think, if they've grown, that they have?
The sovereign citizen movement began in 1970. Its first surge, real surge, though, was in the early 80s during the serious recession and farm crisis of that time period. It had another resurgence in the mid-1990s, where we had a resurgence of all sorts of anti-government extremist activity. At the moment, I would say the sovereign citizen movement has been fairly stagnant in growth. It's got about 300,000 people in it in the United States. It's expanded to a number of foreign countries by now, too, but it's primarily in the United States.
And what about a threat? Do you think that that groups like this are a threat, and how?
The sovereign citizen movement has a long-standing association with violence, up to and including shootouts, armed standoffs, murders, and terrorist plots and attacks. Every year, sovereign citizens kill people in the United States. In many years, at least one of those persons killed will be a police officer. And after an incident in 2010 in which a father and son sovereign citizen couple essentially ambushed and killed two police officers in Arkansas, the FBI had elevated them to be a significant domestic terrorism risk, certainly along with white supremacists and the militia movement. They are one of the major violent extremist threats the United States faces today.
And is there another case that you would compare this one to at all?
In this case, thankfully, cooler heads prevailed. That standoff, that confrontation, was something that could easily have ended up with either sovereigns or police or both being injured or worse. And I'm just very grateful that that didn't happen. Sovereign citizens, when they're, you know, put behind bars, they don't stop being sovereign citizens. They will very often continue their sovereign activity from behind bars, including trying to recruit other inmates or prisoners to the cause. And so, you know, one possible sequel to this is if these individuals are held prior to trial, or if they get substantial sentences following their trials, which could certainly happen, they might end up indoctrinating even more people into the sovereign citizen movement.
Well, Mark Pitkavich, a senior research fellow at the Anti-Defamation League's Center on Extremism, thanks very much for speaking with us.
No problem.